Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. Joining me on this, what day of the week it is? It is Wednesday, is one of my favorite guests, because we love to talk leadership, and so we've done it over the course of All Marine Radio for a number of years, but joining me is Mike Etor. So Mike, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mac. I'm fine. How you doing?
I've been worse in my life, so I'm all right. Now, where are you today? I mean, you're a traveler. You and I live in parallel universe. They don't intersect very often. In fact, they almost did last week, but you were here on the West Coast, and I was on the East Coast. So where are you today?
Well, in reference to last week, I got an alert from Homeland Security. Once I knew you were coming, they declared a high testosterone alert. We could not be in the same county, and so I had to leave the state to allow you to come here. I don't know if you know that, but I took one for the team.
Well, I don't want to get into your personal life, but we had a big discussion. Mike went and had a physical recently, and he wrecked the chart relative to testosterone. Now, I was moderately shocked would be an understatement. And yes. And so we had a very interesting discussion about the validity of medical testing, what a sorry state it is. And you don't have to look any further than the coronavirus to know that. But Mike was buoyed by their misdiagnosis. So congratulations on that.
No, I tell you, it's the third year in a row I've had extraordinary results. The doctor told me that she's happy with any man having testosterone level of 500 to 600. That's normal. And this year I rocked in with a 975. So she said that was probably as a result of genetics and the fact that I still lift hard. But, you know, relative to the coronavirus, Mac, I'm actually considering being a testosterone donor. I think I might, you know, how you can donate plasma and all that. I might, you know, might have people hook up to me, you know.
So you can jumpstart some people and maybe take them off life support system. Well, you know, what's curious about it, I was thinking about this, is that, you know, we don't hear a whole lot about China anymore and the coronavirus. Somehow or other, that's kind of fallen off the radar. In as we kind of become absorbed in our own struggle with it. And so, I mean, and I looked up the other day how many lives are lost annually to influenza, to the flu, right? Not, and again, we all know what influenza is, and it's not to be confused with the stomach flu. But I want to say it was like 60 to 70,000 people.
You know, worldwide, I think.
Let's see.
I think it's about 18 to 25,000 in the United States.
Yeah, while the impact of flu varies, it places a substantial burden on the health people in the United States each year. CDC estimates that influenza has resulted in between 9 million and 45 million diseases, between 140 and 810,000 hospitalizations, and between 12,000 and 61,000 deaths annually since 2010. I mean, I don't want to minimize anything, but that's a pretty big number. And I don't know that, I mean, I see onesies and twosies. I don't see, but I guess it, again, I don't want to understate it because I'm not a health professional, but good to know that you'll donate testosterone to anybody who needs it. Are you taking?
Well, my big fear is that it may not be a viable business model to do that, because I think people may fear me passing them my genetics for facial features, and that's that's probably a showstopper from a business standpoint.
Well, you've done the best. You look very refined on the cover of your book. I have to tell you that. Yeah, honestly, look, you have a nice suit on. Who picked out the tie?
I did, actually. That's my favorite tie. You'll see few pictures of me without that tie. I'm creature of habit, Mac. You know, I wear shoes for 15 years. I wear clothes until they go in and out of fashion about three cycles, just to maximize the utility of them.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, with men's clothes, you can do that, though. And especially if you're a conservative guy, you know, dark suits, you know, moderate lapels, right? White shirts. And you know, I have a tie that's my favorite. And if you would simply reverse your color pattern, you know, it's kind of a dark yellow kind of blending towards gold base with, you know, the I'm not sure what shapes those are. Those diamonds are red. So, yeah, that's my favorite tie. So, yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, look, you know, for a guy who's moderately unattractive, you did, I think the cover is great.
Well, that's thank you so much. You know, when I was in college, one of my friends used to say, "Hey, Mike, what do you think about these shoes that I'm wearing?" And I'm like, "Man, those are unbelievably sissy shoes. I wouldn't be caught dead with those." And he said, "Good, because if you don't like them, that means they're stylish." So I was the benchmark because I wore PT gear. I'm not much of a fashion horse at all, needless to say. So I'll take any and all compliments about my appearance on the book cover or anywhere on social media.
Yeah, I tell you what, I mean, yeah, that's, you know, people say you can't put lipstick on a pig. This cover of this book directly contradicts that. You can.
I think it's more of putting foundation makeup on a manatee or a bull walrus, maybe, you know.
But, there you go. If you prefer. All right, let's start. First of all, for people that don't know that you have a book out, this is the second episode in kind of a 10-part series that we're doing about Mike's book. That is, I would tell you, I've never seen a book like it before. I've seen people write little snippets about, an aspect of Marine Corps leadership. But I don't know that anybody's tried to treat it in toto. And Mike, in about 550 some odd, close to, 600 pages, Mike gets after it. And the book is entitled Trust-Based Leadership, Marine Corps Leadership Concepts for Today's Business Leaders. Mike is the founder and the owner-operator of the Fidelis Leadership Group, in case you don't know. And so, Mike, just in case people didn't hear the first episode, which you can find on the website, tell everybody why you wrote the book, who the book's aimed at.
Fair enough. The book, as Mac mentioned, is Trust-Based Leadership, Marine Corps Leadership Concepts for Today's Business Leaders. So for those of you that don't know, just a brief bio, I did 24 years in the Marine Corps, retired, went into the business world, and I rose to, fairly high levels in a publicly traded company. I was a C-level officer and retired from the business world after 15 years. And after about a year of rest and recovery and general goofing off, I started Fidelis Leadership Group, which is initially executive level coaching of leadership. Has since branched off into, I do seminars, 2-day and 3-day seminars for the general public, at a venue. And I also go inside of companies just for that company's management team for 2 or 3 days. The book really arose from the presentations and discussions I had all through my civilian business career and my conversations and coaching sessions with clients. So I kind of did the material first in practical application and then realized I really needed to collect it in one source document. And so that's the purpose of the book. The book is designed for me to flip to a new candidate or customer and say, here's the book. Read the first 8 chapters. We're going to go over it during next week's session. And so it's pretty much there. And for someone that's got leadership experience, if they would look at the table of contents, I say that it's all there. The structure and the content is all there for them to create a leadership development program from what I've got in the book right there. And in fact, I've already heard from some people, Marines that bought the book said, "No, you're absolutely right, Mike. I'm in my company. And my company won't pay for leadership training, but I bought this book and then bought copies for my management team. And we are absolutely using this as our curriculum. So I had hoped that that would happen. And quite honestly, that makes me feel good inside that it's being leveraged in that way. So first and foremost, the book is how I used just ordinary, fundamental NCO, staff NCO, officer leadership traits, principles, concepts, philosophies, and how I managed to leverage and adapt where appropriate in the business world. And I found through my experience and other Marine leaders, I'm by no means an anomaly, other Marine leaders, Mac, have all said that just about everything they've learned, done, experienced in the Marine Corps has applicability in the leadership realm in the business world, no matter what industry, what size company, what level they're at, or whatever. So I think it's a good resource. I put a lot of time into it, and I hope people are drawing benefit from it.
All right. I just want to kind of summarize the first episode. In the first episode, if you missed it, we talked about I think the general theme is you have a whole lot of leadership experience if you're getting out that that people are looking for. So Mike, summarize kind of what we did in the first episode.
I think in the first episode, we were, what you asked me to do, Mac, was really relate so that if that staff sergeant or corporal or captain or whoever was listening on the podcast, he or she would realize or at least get encouraged by my statements and assertions that you really do know leadership and you really do have applicable and tangible skills, hard skills and soft skills that apply to the business world. You just got to come out here and you got to wade ashore and get a toehold in a company and then let the cream rise to the top, so to speak. So a lot of that was encouraging military veterans that, hey, there is life after the service. And the 0311 say, well, I mean, I'm a Lance Corporal grunt. What the hell can I do? No. You even if you never rose to be a squad leader or a platoon sergeant, just by the fact that you were in an organization and you saw leadership applied and organized and things like that, you've got skills. And I'm not saying you can walk right out and be an executive, because quite frankly, a lot of senior officers can't do that. Because they have to get the lay of the land. But I maintain that the 24-year-old corporal or Lance Corporal right out of the Marine Corps has in fact much more leadership awareness and hands-on experience and ability to transform to a civilian leader than the kid right out of college. So for those listening out there, I know it's a little repetitive. Have heart, have no fears. There's a place for you out here. Leadership is your main attribute if you're in a non-technical MOS. Now, if you're in a technical MOS, you can obviously lead with that and say, hey, I was a data dink, or I learned how to do satellite radios repair and things like that. That's all well and good. But I will tell you that for the military folks coming into the business world, it's almost a given that at some point you're going to naturally gravitate toward leadership roles because the most of your colleagues do not have training, do not gravitate toward it, and so good things will happen for you. And I'm not saying that you don't have to learn. You definitely have to learn about business. And I'm not saying you don't have to learn more about leadership. I'm saying you've got a great foundation, even if you're a one-term Marine in any MOS. You've got a great foundation to even imitate some of the leadership, the good leadership that you saw in the Marine Corps. And of course, you probably saw some bad leadership too. So we want to leave that behind.
But Mike, don't you think that's important though? In your long career, I mean, taking just as much away, sometimes more from, well, I won't say more, but taking as much away from bad leaders as you do for good leaders, I think is a huge part of, being a leader. It's
No doubt.
understanding the power to destroy mor to I won't say destroy, to crush morale, to make work drudgery, as opposed to making it a vibrant, exciting, fun place to come to. And I think those lessons are extremely important.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And so you're right on it, Mac. In my experience, the best leaders in the Marine Corps and in the corporate America are very secure and have no qualms whatsoever about admitting they're not perfect, asking, hey, what do you recommend? And more importantly, sharing their most dismal failures and disappointments with others so that others don't repeat their mistakes. Marine Corps and corporate America are very much alike. So you've got leaders in the Marine Corps that we knew blew it, did something wrong, but they'll never admit it. Everybody knows it's obvious, but they'll never admit it. They'll just divert blame elsewhere, or they'll just shut up. They won't admit it. The very best in the Corps and any organization out here will sit back and say, all right, fellas, I got to admit that was my idea, or I didn't listen to you. We went with my option, and it just didn't work out well. So what do we do next? I'm listening, you know.
You know,
those are the best. So yes, any leader worth his salt. I had great leaders in the Marine Corps, Mac, but I have to tell you, I did run into a couple bad leaders, and I mean, a couple of them were quite bad, either inept, incompetent in their MOS, or I ran into a couple, quite honestly, that were just mean-spirited people. And talk about crushing the life out of a unit. Yeah, absolutely. And the same applies. So that's another lesson, Mac, aside from learning from bad leaders as well as good, I want to emphasize to the vets out there making the transition. Hey, the civilian world is no different than the Marine Corps in a sense that most people are good. Most leaders really care, but you do have that small slice of incompetent or indifferent or both who are just bad people. They're minor in number, just like they are in the Marine Corps. But man, it sucks to be you if you're underneath one of those guys in the org chart.
No, let me tell you, there's in my experience, there's no worse system to work in than a caste system with somebody who can't lead at the top. And I'll give you two Zinniisms. One, you cannot engineer around the guy at the top or the woman at the top, right? If you've got somebody, you know, and organizations try to do it all the time, but it is incredibly, incredibly, you know, deflating and difficult when you have somebody at the top that doesn't get it and doesn't know how to make it go. The second thing I'll tell you that popped into my head when you were talking, General Zinni, I heard say something about having an AAR in Korea after we tasked engineers with clearing a truck that a 6x and a moon pie truck were going to have a, you know, incredible event because there was only one way going over these mountains. He said, and then what we wound up having was this engineer company commander single-handedly fighting off bad guys, clearing roads, building bridges. He said the guy should have got put in. If we gave Navy crosses for exercises, this guy would have rated one. And he said, so we get everybody in, and it's obviously got screwed up, and the movement over these mountains, you know, which was an important piece of what we were doing, failed. And he said, so in order for us to have a rational discussion, I had to take responsibility. And he said, okay, look, right, we got to find out what went wrong. This was my fault. I failed to task properly. I failed to communicate my intent. As a result, all the rest of these things happened. Now, do you think we could have a rational discussion about it? And he said, until somebody either is assigned or accepts blame, he said, a lot of times the frankness isn't in the room the way that you want it to be. And so he always, General Zinni always makes me laugh because he has this gift for humor and leadership. And he combines them two and, you know, incredible real life experiences. But, you know, to me, he's an artist in terms of whether you're talking business leadership or military leadership. And he always uses his sense of humor, right, to further the cause. And so you made me think of it right there.
No doubt about it. And you know what you're really talking to, Mac, is the fundamental law of leadership that a unit or organization inevitably takes on the character, behavior, work ethic, whatever, of the leader. So if you have a leader that is so arrogant or armor-plated that they cannot admit fault or error, he's setting up a, and so he definitely doesn't want to hear it about himself. And he's probably also that kind of guy that shoots everybody in the face who makes a mistake. So that's not a speak truth to power culture. And by Zinni standing up and admitting, hey, things didn't go well, that's on me, let's talk about how do we get better. Let me tell you about how I blew some things. He just relieved all the pressure. It's like a valve releasing it from like a pressure cooker. Just all the steam goes out and people say, okay, the big guy just admitted he blew some things. He wants to know how we can help. And so that gets people talking. And that technique works well in the business world. People in the business world would do well to see senior leaders like Zinni. And there are out here. There are many senior civilian leaders out here that are every bit the leader Zinni is. And some people would say, whoa, what are you talking about, Mike? Well, let me tell you, I've met people that have forgotten more about the business world than General Zinni knows. And somehow they have picked up Zinni-like leadership qualities. And I think General Zinni has been in enough boards and enough companies to, if he was here, he'd say, no, Mike is spot on. I don't know the mechanics of these companies. These are smart guys. And I either run into people that don't know what NCOs know, even though they're senior executives, or I run into guys that despite no training and all that, this guy would have been a great Marine. He really would have been a great Marine. In fact, I find myself asking sometimes, you know, and I'll talk to some squared away civilians. I like, were you in the military? Were you raised in a military family? Did you go to a military school? And usually there's some, not usually, but often there is an association with someone that had their act together, you know, like my kids, when my kids do planning and stuff in their civilian jobs, military vets will say, hey, I just heard you say something. Are you in the military? And they'll say, no, my dad was a Marine. And like, I knew it, you know, nobody says that saying without, you know, having some kind of military tie and all of that. So I'm a big fan of Zinni. And Zinni would be the first, I think, to admit or to affirm what I'm saying is this stuff, I say it several times in a book, this Marine Corps leadership stuff, it really works. It really works in the business world. It works great. You have to adapt it, just like if I was an infantry battalion commander and all of a sudden they're jerking me out and putting me in charge of an aviation squadron. Well, I don't know what I don't know. And I can still lead and I know how to treat Marines and all of that, but there are differences in the unit, even some cultural differences that I have to adapt my leadership style to. Same thing for the aviation guy coming over to the grunts and all of that. So no different in the business world. And that's, if there's anything from this long-winded talk that I'm giving right now, Mac, is people are people, no matter what uniforms they wear, no matter how old they are, what environment they're in, and leadership is leadership. And people, even in the business world, gravitate toward good leaders, and they identify and avoid bad leaders one for one, no doubt about it. You can't, just like you can't fool a Marine, whether or not the lieutenant or the gunny really cares about them, can't fool civilians, Mac. They understand if you're really, you know, out for them with their best interests. The difference is, and it's a huge difference, is out in the business world, they actually have a vote. They can quit. They can say, man, I've had, you know, 8 leaders in my career, and this is the worst. And I'm unhappy. I have an ulcer waking up every morning. I'm out of here. And so leaders in the Marine Corps don't have to worry about that. You get a bad battalion commander, and he doesn't have to worry about his company commanders and PFCs quitting on him. They may hate life, but they're there for the duration of his his tenure. In the business world, you get a bad leader that comes in and demoralizes people, and there'll be massive turnover. And in the business world, massive turnover is associated with bleed of organizational competence and effectiveness. And eventually that leader, the crosshairs will be put on that leader and he'll get fired, sadly, after he's pretty much devastated and decimated the organization.
You're No, you're describing people that, you know, we all have life experiences, right? About
Oh, yeah.
that. And then, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting though, the quitting thing. When people quit, right? That's somebody's voting. Somebody's registering an opinion. And when, you know, people see trend lines, and those are those register as well. I want to talk about what we're going to talk about today, and that is in the book in the first section. Last week we last time we did this, we talked about culture concepts and philosophies. And so today I want to talk about what you call fundamentals and techniques, right? There's laws of leadership, there's responsibilities of a leader, there's pillars of leadership, there's traits, there's principles, right? And then you talk about delegation, supervision, four indicators, and then reputation. So I want to talk about that. So, you know, it's and I'm going to quote Zinni again, you know, and then ask you to kind of, you know, make this make sense for us. When I heard General Zinni speak in the summer of 1990, and honestly, it changed my life. And that's why I quote his ass all the time. I still have the thing that he did, and it's on my website. It's on the YouTube channel that I have. And anyway, and it is one of the most unbelievable PMEs I've ever seen, and still to this day in my life. One thing he said was, "We've got to get away from this Boy Scout, right? Traits, you know, way of teaching leaders. Most of the great leaders, you know, didn't have a third of those traits, you know. Yet they persist because, you know, we got them. I believe the Marine Corps got them from the Boy Scouts when we started putting leadership manuals together and things like that. So, talk to me about how all of this works." You know, help me with this, because there's from pillars to traits to principles, right? Most of us aren't the majority of those things. What's the utility in all of that stuff?
Yep. To Zinni's comments, I think he would agree with this if he was here. As far as the Boy Scout, I think he is saying, look, and I'm about to cover it. I mean, I literally teach Marine Corps leadership traits and principles, Mac, and BAMSIS, you know, the troop leading steps. And I think what Zinni is saying, look, just because you teach somebody the troop leading steps and the S and BAMSIS and the leadership traits and principles doesn't mean that once he's checked that box and understands them, that he's actually competent at exhibiting them. And some leaders become quite effective with a fair amount of strengths and weaknesses in any number of those traits and principles. I mean, we all have known incredibly effective leaders that we would follow into the gates of hell, and they may be a little short on tact, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, good leaders are in the eye of the beholder. And just like Marines, you know, civilians have an inflated view of Marines. They think we're all, they think they all look like Mac, you know, like 32 inch waist, 54 inch chest, you know?
Boom! Yes,
There you go. Boom.
smart as he smart as hell, good looking, charming,
Yes,
right?
exactly.
Mesmerizing, mesmerizing,
Exactly.
but we're not.
But you know, I tell them, no, there's Marines in all shapes and sizes, all backgrounds, and it's no different out in the business world with leaders. So I've seen leaders that have no training whatsoever, and because they've got some innate aptitude and they've worked really hard and had good mentors or whatever, they are. I mean, Mac, I'm telling you could put them in charge of a battalion, and while they wouldn't know what they're doing tactically. The company commanders and them would say, I got to be impressed. This guy doesn't know anything, but he's asking the right kind of questions. And if he gets us what we're asking for support wise, we're going to be able to pull it off.
And
We're going to
he's
look at,
created the right environment for all this
yeah,
to happen.
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So I guess, you know, I'll preface it with this. You know how the literal term general officer means that you're supposed to be taking guys and putting stars on their collar, and they are now general officers. They are general high level officers, no longer MOS dependent, and they are pretty much the duty experts in leading the strategy and strategic direction of the organization. Well, the business world is no different. At certain levels, the general officer concept comes into play. And I was one of them. Obviously, I wasn't a general officer. In the business world, though, in my company, I was the equivalent of a general officer. And I'm a prime example. I was in charge of most of the company's back office, the non-sales. So I had marketing, internet operations, human resources, the internal technology department, some of the finance group, logistics, you name it. If it wasn't sales, I had most of it. And I had expertise, training, or experience in none of that. None of that. What I did have was I had the same experience and skills and techniques of a fire support coordinator in an infantry battalion. And that guy doesn't fly jets, doesn't fly helicopters. He's not an artilleryman, probably doesn't know how to use mortars, you know, actually fire the mortar anymore. It's been 10 years since IOC and all of that. But when it comes to synchronizing and harmonizing, like the conductor of the symphony, yep, he's really good at that. And that's where the general officer concept comes out into the business world quite well, really quite well. So reference, you know, back to the first section, if somebody is looking to say, Mike, I believe you, I believe this Marine stuff works, I want to read your book. The book is written for a guy that knows nothing. So the first section is culture, concepts, and philosophies. And I'm saying, if you want to know the underlying concept, core values, the mindset of the Marines and Marine Corps, read that first section and I'll get you there. And then the second section is where I'm going to actually start getting into some of the science of leadership. You know, we have science and we have art. And the science of leadership in the Marine Corps is no different than how I teach it in the business world. The science is what I call the five laws of leadership, the responsibilities of a leader, leadership traits, leadership principles. And some of this, Mac, is absolutely verbatim from the Marine Corps. The traits and principles are verbatim. And then for each, I give a business analogy so that that raw businessman, that student of leadership who knows nothing about the Marine Corps can say, okay, I hear what he's saying about know your people and all that. And he's using a squad leader example. In fact, I think I lifted it right from a basic school student handout and then put in, you know, business analogies so they could figure it out. Talk to them about delegation and supervision, the four indicators of leadership, exactly the same in the business world. And civilians love this stuff. Once I explain it, because they have usually, Max, civilians have no leadership training whatsoever. If they have had leadership, it's usually a leadership event every now and then. Few of them have gone through a leadership program, and even fewer yet have been in an organization that has deemed itself a culture of leadership in the way that we, you know, Marine Corps is a culture of leadership. Take away that bottom 10%, and those young Marines really are surrounded by a sound doctrine of leadership at all levels. And that's missing from the business world. So the fundamentals and techniques is me saying, hey, before you become an artist, before Mozart, you know, created all of these symphonies and all that, he had to learn how to read and write music. Before, you know, Michelangelo could do the Sistine Chapel, he had to learn how to mix paints and devise colors and things like that. So leadership is no different. Before you can be Jack Welch, God rest his soul, I believe he just passed away yesterday. Yep. Before you can be some business guru employing art, you need to know the science of leadership. And the science of leadership I can teach you in several hours. And it is that section right there, fundamentals and techniques, traits, principles, pillars of leadership, three responsibilities, delegation. And I tell people at the end of the book, you now know all of the science that Marine leaders know. Now, I'm waiting for some Marines to say, hey, Mike, you forgot this. And I'll be like, yeah, you're right. That'll go into the next edition and all that. But I mean, you've read it, Mac. I mean, it's pretty much all there. I think you would agree. The science of it is not hard. Let me give you another example. I maintain that the Marine Corps, I don't know what they're doing now at marksmanship, so I'm going to go back to our day in the Marine Corps. Because they taught me at Parris Island so well the fundamentals of sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger squeeze, even in my old age, I can pretty much pick up any long gun. Never seen it before. Might not even know how to cock it. But you tell me, Mike, this weapon is armed. There's the target. And because I know sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger squeeze, chances are I'm going to hit that target. And so we learned Marine Corps was always very good at teaching the fundamental core science of shooting. Before you clear rooms, before you do sniping and all that, you need to learn how to get that bullet on the center mass with iron sights. And this is the iron sights of leadership. This section right here, fundamentals and techniques, is the sight alignment and sight picture of leadership. Your turn.
No, I think that's a great way to articulate, right, what you're talking about, because too often I think, and I have quarrels with people in my life about the misapplication of concepts. For instance, we're infantrymen, right? There are no bad techniques. Okay, now you may like the L-shape ambush. You may like the Australian peel, right? You may like the Australian style fast roping. Not fast roping. What do we call that? Rappelling. Okay. Yeah. So these are all different techniques. You might like the old school comm wire and chem light night attack. Okay. My problem with people is the misapplication of techniques. And for when we were instructors, right, when you don't teach it right, when you don't teach the concept right, then really when you screw that up, then they're reduced to thinking, okay, I'm supposed to be all these different traits, right? Instead of, okay, these are things that all or leaders ought to consider, and I, as I develop myself as a leader, have to consider these things, which is fundamentally different from looking at them saying, okay, I'm supposed to be all those things. And so to me, I like the way you articulate that, because, I mean, I've had problems with guys who, one of my first arguments at the basic school was about the way we teach aiming stakes. We don't teach them right. You know, we have captains stepping on, sticks and telling lieutenants that, those aren't good enough sticks. Well, let me tell you something, Captain. I wouldn't put a stick up to limit my rifle if somebody was actually shooting at me, unless Etor's fighting position is pushed out and I'm going to shoot him in the back of the head. Otherwise, yeah, I may have to shoot, and I'm not going to go clang off a stupid stick and then get shot in the forehead if it's not required.
Yeah.
But when we don't teach it that way, right, they walk away thinking that has no utility. I will never do that. It's stupid. And so to me, it's the way we teach this stuff is so important. I think your preamble there to this part of your book is spot on.
Yeah, and I will say this, Mac, having been in the, I've been retired from the Marine Corps 22 years now.
Whoa.
Yeah. And, amazing. I can't believe it. I would have bet against it, but the Marine Corps is still around. It existed without me. I mean, that's kind of shocking to me,
You know what? A lot of people feel the same thing. Like, we've survived ETOR. That's unbelievable. Who knew?
Well, I say, the smartass reply to that is, if the Marine Corps was a stock listed on the Dow, once I left, it probably would have gone up $5 a share,
Best
thing I can do for the Marine Corps is to leave it. So, I hear what you're talking about with the aiming stakes and all of that. Being a high-level leader here and now coaching and teaching leaders, I will tell you this. There are incredibly smart civilians out here. And I catch a bunch of this tone from senior enlisted, and I would say lieutenant, colonel, and up, including colonels and general officers. There's a whiff sometime of these, and I'm doing air quotes now, these screwed up civilians. And I got to tell you, if you come out here thinking that because this guy's a little chubby and he hasn't gone to IOC and he has no combat time and he can't run, if you come out here measuring by that, you're going to fail out here, because you might literally be working with the next Bill Gates, who, from, you know, at his best, didn't look like he was probably going to do too well on the O course, you know?
Yeah, that rope was going to give him some problems just looking at him.
Yeah, you know, no doubt about it, you know? But my point is, when I, or my, what I'm trying to get to is, when I coach leaders on their problems and the problems of their organization, which always revert, you know, go back to their senior leadership team, most of the time, most of the topics of their failures, the cause of their failures, the root cause, Mac, is rooted in something in this section right here, fundamentals and techniques. They are deviating from proven leadership principles, traits. They're not delegating. They're not effectively supervising or ensuring that the SMBAMSIS is happening. I ask leaders to, you know, let's do a review of the four indicators of leadership. And sometimes they let me do it with their teams, and, you know, the morale in their group just absolutely terrible. So I never help any businesses with, hey, I think you can reduce the cost of your product 13% if you outsource this component to Mexico or China. That's not my skill set. My skill set is helping leadership team get right leadership wise and organizationally. And I got to tell you, Mac, 99% of the time, it goes back to a deviation or just a dismissal of paying attention to the fundamentals. And so you've got guys that are literally trying to do art. Now what they're trying to do requires art. Because they're not fundamentally sound in science, the company's failing. You know, they're just not treating people right. The CEO needs to wake up one day and realize, you know, now that I take a step back, since we hired this new chief marketing officer, the marketing department has turned over 3 times in 3 years. We can't keep somebody in that department. So maybe, just maybe, something's not right with the chief marketing officer.
Hello.
And they always, not always, but they almost always look at this in hindsight, just like the Marines. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of commanders that cycled in and out of Afghanistan, Iraq, that said, geez, in hindsight, what the hell were we doing in this province? Or what I would have done this better. Why did they do, you know, hindsight is always 20/20, even in the business world, you know. But I'm just telling you, my experience is most failures in business are a result of the failure of leaders to exercise the science that a competent Marine NCO, what makes him a competent Marine NCO, I mean competent, not the best guy in the platoon or even the company, a competent NCO, if the business leaders have that, they're going to do okay. There's a shockingly high number of business leaders that don't have that NCO's training. Therefore, of course, they're failing on leadership traits and principles.
Right.
They don't know what they are.
Okay, I want to ask you some. Can you provide some historical background on some of this stuff? On Friday, I do a segment about food. And one of the things I really enjoy is the history of food.
History of what?
The history of food.
Okay.
Right? So, for instance, some of the greatest dishes in our country come out of the ghetto. In fact, a lot do. And what were they? They were things that rich people threw away that poor people used and ultimately found a way to turn into something delicious. So to me, the history of food is very interesting. I want to talk about the history of some of this stuff, if you can. I assume that you know something about it. If you don't, you can stop me in my tracks. The 5 laws of leadership, where do they come from?
The 5 laws of leadership are actually, I made them up. Now, if you look at that, you would say, whoa, wait a minute. What do you mean talking about you made them up, you know? I challenge you to look at them, Mac, and tell me that they are not the 5 laws of leadership, though we haven't probably seen them in written format anywhere. And so that's a knock on the Marine Corps. So if you want, I'll read them again for the audience.
I'll read them. Number one, leaders are responsible for everything their organization, everything that does or does not happen in their organizations. The first time I ever heard that, I almost shit my pants. Because I was good with everything that, right, happens, right?
Yeah.
But when we get to the part where it fails to happen, whoa, that's a little broad, isn't it, boys and girls? And I remember I sat up in my chair when I heard that. I'm like, whoa. Number two, leaders can delegate authority, but they cannot delegate responsibility. Number three, the members of an organization will replicate the character, values, and behavior demonstrated by their leaders. Number four, leaders must be consistent in leadership style, personality, mood, behavior, interpersonal skills, and decision-making. And five, leaders should never give an order they are unwilling or unable to enforce. Now, that is like straight off the bulkhead from someplace, but those are ETORs, five laws of leadership.
Yeah, and let me explain that and clarify it. Everything you just said, there's probably people out there listening to that and say, well, that's not ETORs. No, I'm not saying I made them up. I'm saying that rarely have you ever seen all five of those listed in one place.
No, I agree. I'm with you.
Of these are tribal knowledge,
right?
And they passed by the gunny or your TBS SPC and or whomever.
And you hear them all the time when something gets screwed up, right?
Yes.
And we go down this road. Okay.
Yes.
Next.
So,
okay. Go ahead.
I've called them the laws because even if you've had mastery of the traits and principles, if you're deviating from these laws, all is lost.
Right.
And it only takes you to deviate from one of these laws. I mean, you could be the most tactful, most caring, most intelligent leader of all. But if you're not doing number three, if you're unethical, I don't care how good everything else is, you're going to be unethical. You're going to be Wells Fargo, where the leaders were unethical and the whole organization turned unethical and they got caught creating dummy accounts and all of that. Everyone got fired. The business cratered. Shareholders suffered. And about 3 weeks ago, the SEC leveled a $3 billion fine on the company. $3 billion, Mac.
That's with a B, right?
B, billion with a B. So if you're a shareholder, and now there's going to be all sorts of lawsuits from the shareholders. Some people are probably going to go to jail over this, and rightfully so. But it was because it was all rooted in these five laws. I'm going to flat out say it. They had some leaders at the top that promoted, suggested, condoned, or overlooked illegal and unethical practices in their branch offices. And ultimately, most branch offices were conducting themselves unethically because that's what it took to compete. And then somebody blew the whistle on them. And it was so egregious. This was not like, well, we just had one rogue manager out there in the Eastern region. This is a company-wide rot.
Yeah, systemic.
And they got caught.
Systemic.
Yep.
Amazing when you actually read it. Okay, the three main responsibilities of a leader. Give me the story behind that.
Well, everybody knows the first two. You want to go ahead and read those?
Yes, I will. I'll be I'm the reader, kind of like the scribe.
There you go. I'm just trying to stave off Alzheimer's for you, Matt.
I'm the oral scribe.
I'm going to send you a couple crossword puzzles after this to do tonight.
You know what? I'm good at those. Just for the record, I have a theory in life. If you watch Double Jeopardy, right? If you watch Jeopardy from the time you're in like seventh or eighth grade, you can get through college without going to class. Right. And you can get a little bit through the way of fighting Alzheimer's. And because you will be doing crossword puzzles for much of your life and you'll be good at it. So watch Jeopardy, kids. Watch Jeopardy.
Hold that thought. Let me interrupt you for those veterans or soon to be veterans that are making the transition or even people that are listening out there. I maintain if you binge watch Shark Tank and that Profit, Marcus Lemonis. If you watch these kind of business shows, these shows can give you a real practical application education that beats, I think, a lot of MBAs. So listen to these shows. And when you see smart people like Mark Cuban and Richard Branson telling an entrepreneur, love your product, but the margin isn't there. You're just not, we can't produce this cheap enough to make enough money to pay for enough advertising to make this a worldwide phenom. So I'm out. These are business lessons that you will not learn in business school.
All right, here's a text message. This is on ties. Ties change slightly each year. If someone is interviewing, they need to buy a current tie because there are people in business that look at things like that. Once you get the job, you can pull out your five-year-old tie with gravy stains. Well, I own my own business, so I'm not getting hired by anybody. So that's why I wear my favorite tie. I don't know what Mike's excuse is. He runs his own business, too.
I think we're talking different things here. The tie that's on my book cover and that I wear to most public engagements is 20 years old. Whoa. However, it's never dirty and it doesn't look 20 years old. In fact, it's pristine. So to the texter's point, old cannot be soiled, thread worn, and things like that. I agree with you. People do look at things like this.
And I would tell you, the person who texted that, they would meet that definition. Soiled and thread worn. Okay. He would meet that.
Do you know the person?
Yes.
Oh.
Retired colonel, Marine Corps.
Okay.
Yeah. Calling you out on your tie advice.
So you're telling me this guy probably hasn't trimmed his toenails in a couple of weeks.
No. He probably has. But he's a colonel. He probably had somebody do it. He has a version of Gunga Din with him that does it. Okay. I want to get back to those. The three main responsibilities of a leader: accomplish the mission, take care of your people, develop the next generation of leaders. Mm-hmm. All right. Tell me, where does that come from?
Well, as you know, accomplish the mission and take care of your Marines, take care of your people. That is taught in the Marine Corps. That's taught in every military service. And we're taught that, hey, sometimes number one and two are competing demands. So we all get that. What we do in the Marine Corps very well, though, is often unspoken and unwritten, is the Marine Corps is excellent at identifying and training the next generation of leaders. The fact that the Marine Corps changes over, I believe, two-thirds every 24 months or so means that, hey, today's PFC is 3 years from now, corporal and sergeant, and he's got to go. Some of these lieutenants in TBS right now are going to be field grade officers. And so the emphasis on learning and scaling your leadership ability never really stops, formally and informally. I wrote down number three because I challenge you to find anywhere in the Marine Corps where number three is listed right underneath one and two. We talk about number two and we kind of acknowledge tribally number three. When I'm teaching civilians, I don't want to leave number three up for, assumption or inference. I want to tell them, you got to focus on the mission. You got to take care of your people. And if you want your company to survive 10 years from now and survive you, family, business, publicly traded, whatever, you have a duty to identify and lead the next generation of leaders. Military is pretty good. I mean, the bottom line is no general officer can be accused of not having colonels and stuff in the pipeline because the pipeline kind of takes care of itself. In the business world, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to senior leaders, Mac, and they say, I have no succession plan. We've done no training. And right now, I've got four senior executives over 60 years old. They all want to retire within 2 years. And quite frankly, I have nobody in the company that's ready to stand up. They're not going to be ready anytime soon to stand up. So imagine the commandant leaving and several 3 stars and 2 stars retiring. And the commandant having to go to the Secretary of the Navy saying, hey, boss, we're in trouble. I mean, we got nobody, you know? And this happens a lot in the business world. So when I'm teaching, remember, I'm teaching business leaders now, right, for you that are listening to it that are still in the military. This pipeline, this inertia, this flowing river to the top that you've got in the Marine Corps does not happen out here, because most of the senior leaders themselves have not been trained that one of their primary duties, even as a second lieutenant or first lieutenant or captain, is to train other leaders. The companies that survive the test of time,
right,
they've done this. They have leadership development strategies.
They have a farm. They have a farm system, Mike. Right? There's people coming.
Absolutely. And I'm that's why I'm trying to tell the military folks, there's such a market for you out here, because if you can just get a toehold, you can do well. And the ability to go from major to major general out here in the right company at the right time is very good. It's realistic. It's absolutely realistic.
Okay, now where did that list come from? The main responsibilities of a leader.
Well, the first two are right from the Marine Corps. Any leadership curriculum in the Marine Corps will tell you that leaders have two main responsibilities, you know, focus on the mission, take care of your people. The third is, like I said, I think the Marine Corps does it. I think all Marines will say, well, no kidding, Mike, we do that. I chose to write it down in my book because it's my book and this is what I teach civilians. So I know Marines do this, and the fact that Marines don't list three main duties did not stop me or inhibit me from listing three main duties of leaders as Marines see it. I've not had anybody argue with that.
No. Okay. No, I'm just, okay, let's and on to the next one.
I've also not had anybody tell me, no, Mike, you're wrong. The lesson plan for the Staff Academy actually has that extra one down there after the first two. Uh-huh. And by the way, I'm not saying there's only three, Mac. There's somebody could make, say, Mike, I got five. And if you listen to me, I'll say, my God, you're right. I'm going to change the book the next edition. You know,
next
what
edition.
I'm saying is Universal says, you know, focus on the mission, you know, accomplish the mission. Number two, take care of your people. And it's just a given that we're going to have someone to step into the major's role and the colonels and the generals and the sergeants, major, first sergeants. It's just a given. But out here, I mean, in the Marine Corps, that given came as a result of laws and practices and policies and promotion boards and time and grade and all that. You don't have that for the most part out here in companies. You don't have that.
Gone.
It's much more of a hodgepodge, a la carte. All right, we need a general officer marketing guy, and we're going to hire one. We didn't develop one. We're going to hire one. So the best companies have a mix. They have leadership development programs, strategies, and they identify and promote and groom the best from within. And they also have the ability, unlike the Marine Corps, to say, hey, we're going to go steal a general officer from DuPont or GM or whatever. Imagine if the Marine Corps could do that and say, hey, you know, that Army two-star actually got his stuff in one bag here, and we're going to make an offer.
My guest is Mike Etor. We're talking about his book, Trust-Based Leadership. This is episode two of our discussions about his book. And all right, five pillars. So I just trying to get it through my head. So, for instance, the five pillars of leadership, which are authority, responsibility, accountability, chain of command, and delegation of authority.
Yep.
Those come from your distillation?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yep. I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to understand this. So talk to me about those five. Give me, Etor says about these five things what?
You going to read them?
I just did. Authority, responsibility, accountability, chain of command, and delegation of authority. You know, Mike, there's a listening comprehension component of this. All right. Pay attention.
You're right. Well, listen, I don't think anyone out there, just listen to you rattle those off, would argue that those are really a big deal. And so if you think about what we've talked about, we're teaching the science of leadership in this section, Matt. So I started with the five laws of leadership that, hey, this, aside from character and integrity and, you know, all of that, five laws of leadership. The next thing I talk about is the three main responsibilities of a leader. And now we're talking about the pillars of leadership. And so it's a building block approach. So those items, those pillars you just lifted off, I think you could say, yeah, I understand why Mike put them there, because it's going in a logical sequence. And sometimes we're going out of sequence with how the Marine Corps teaches them, or the Marine Corps doesn't teach them formally. They just kind of absorb them somewhere. And so if I accuse the Marine Corps of doing anything, it's Marine Corps is so good at leadership, so good at teaching and infusing leadership, that they often become complacent or even unskilled in writing down the curriculum in case, let's say the Marine Corps went extinct and 100 years from now they wanted to resurrect it. Well, think about how much of our leadership curriculum is unspoken and unwritten. And that's what I tried to do in this book.
Got it. Okay. All right. I'm good with that. All right, let's talk about after pillars of leadership, leadership traits and principles. What's the historical origin of that? Did you explore stuff like that?
I did. And all I can say is leadership traits and principles, I think, first surfaced in the Marine Corps and the Army in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, various Naval Academy. I've looked and they're all out there in some form or fashion long ago, almost 100 years ago, if not earlier. And what I have found, now this is not formal studies, Mac, this is just Mike Etor kind of half-assing it, reading books and all of that.
Right.
I think that early leadership manuals took their cue from ancient leadership, you know, ancient, the study of, you know, Jomini and things like that, and somebody distilled them to plain English. And then I actually think they took them from like self-help books, because there were self-help books long ago. And I actually think some of them were distilled from the Bible and similar religious doctrines. I mean, if you look at the leadership traits and principles, none of those are out of alignment with really most major religions that you'll know about. I don't want to turn into a religious discussion, but I don't know of any religion that says you shouldn't have tact, you shouldn't care for your people, you should, you know, you get my point.
Got it.
So somewhere good people snatched good common sense knowledge and said, this is what we're seeing in the best mayors, leaders of the round table, whatever, and we're going to start codifying it.
Got it.
And they've remained fairly static in the Marine Corps, I think, for a good long while.
Got it. Okay. Is there anything
verbatim? Those are absolutely verbatim. I think it's a TBS. They're all quoted. And by the way, when I make some of these things up, Mac, like five laws, three main pillars, five pillars, three main responsibilities, in the text of the book, I want to make sure the readers understand, I'm explaining this. Like, hey, I'm calling these the five laws of leadership. I am calling them this. I don't think Marines will argue with it, but I want to make sure you understand this is not a direct quote from the Marine Corps.
Got it.
And then I say, now, these traits and principles, this is a direct quote from the Marine Corps. And I have a footnote right there.
Got it. All right. You devote a chapter to delegation, another one to supervision. Why did you break those two things out in their own dedicated chapters?
I think, Mac, if you look back at most of the leaders in the Marine Corps that you saw that failed, I would say at least 50% or more of them failed because they either failed to delegate, or they delegated improperly to people that were untrained or unworthy of that delegation, which applies, you know, means judgment, you know, was lacking. And or they didn't supervise. And so these two are just like failure to delegate and the colonel trying to do everything himself, the gunny or the sergeant major trying to do everything himself. We know that's a recipe for disaster.
Right.
We also know.
And we've all seen it, right?
We've all seen it.
Staying up 48 hours, dip running down their chin, don't even know their own name, don't know what time it is. Couldn't give you a grid coordinate if they wanted to, because to do more than two numbers, their brains can't do anymore. And they just can't let the three or the XO be in charge.
Yes. Yeah, yes, exactly. In fact, I think, and I don't want to bash
Don't
women.
say any names.
No names, but remember we had a senior combat leader relieved in a recent conflict, and from what I heard, the main root of his problems was he exhausted himself. He allowed himself to become exhausted. And when you get exhausted, you can't think clearly, and eventually you are going to succumb, and you have to sleep. So I don't care how brilliant your mind is, you get me Mattis with 3 days of no sleep, and he's basically the equivalent at that point of Lance Corporal Etor after a good stiff night at the E Club. He's deteriorated. Nothing will deteriorate a human like a lack of sleep.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Really is.
So, but so in your estimation, that topic is so significant. That's why you busted out in its own chapter.
Huge. Absolutely huge. We are, it is banged into our head. You got to listen to your staff NCO. You got to give that sergeant, a chance. Your lieutenant, the captain. I would tell my lieutenants, I'm not coming in tomorrow until 7 a.m. You guys got it. Or, hey, we're going out to the field first day. They're yours. Give me your plan. What are you going to do? Here's your grid square. What are you going to do with your? So that's banged into our heads because the inference is always there, Mac, that, there's going to be casualties and people need to be able to step up. The captain's going to get killed. The staff sergeant's going to get shot, that kind of stuff. And so the need to delegate and develop a bench, so to speak, of people that can do things is paramount. Also, delegation means leveraging. I was a big one on that. A lot of guys bet on their officers. Some bet on their staff NCOs. Some bet on their staff NCOs and officers. I bet on those guys, but I bet on the NCOs because there's a shitload more NCOs than staff NCOs or an officer. And you get a company or battalion's worth of corporals and sergeants really acting like corporals and sergeants, and they can do wondrous things even if the staff NCOs and officers are average at best. So why wouldn't you attack the mass of your leaders? So if you treat them like leaders, train them as leaders, delegate to them like leaders, they'll be leaders. That parallel is one for one out in the business world with managers, supervisors, foremen, shift directors, whatever the case may be. And a lot of senior leaders haven't had that training that, hey, you need to train your people, make sure they're there. But if you've got a shift foreman, you're not expected to be out there up that guy's butt the entire time. Let him supervise. If you have to be there, then what's that? Do you ever take vacation? Do you ever go away for a week on vacation? What happens then? Well, they make sure. Well, then you need to start delegating. So yes, delegation and supervision done well or done poorly or ineffectively leads to good or bad things in the Marine Corps and the business world. And those two things, delegation and the importance of supervision, are often very much neglected in the business world per training and cultural bias.
Talk to me about, give me a few pearls of wisdom when it comes to supervision. Etor says.
Etor says that the S in BAMSIS resonates well with civilians. And I could give you the phone numbers of guys that worked for me 10 years from ago, and you could call them today and say, what's the S in BAMSIS mean? And they'll say, supervision. It's the most important thing. You just can't tell your team, we're going to do this, ready, break, go do it. You got to supervise. You got to supervise effectively, and you delegate and things like that. So I literally teach civilians what the troop leading steps are. And I say, hey, look, you don't need to remember what BAMSIS means. What I'm banging into your head is it's so important in the Marine Corps, we bang it in their head. I guarantee you, Marines of 40 years ago may not remember what the other ones are, but they remember what the S in BAMSIS means. It means supervise. And if you supervise, you won't go wrong as a leader in most cases. If you don't supervise or ensure the proper supervision down the chain, things typically are not going to work out well, or best case scenario, they're not going to work out as well as they could be. Even if they're acceptable, because you didn't supervise and make spot corrections and do course corrections, you'll get maybe a 7 out of a possible 10 with that product, that operation, the product rollout, the installation of software, or whatever the case may be. So delegation and supervision do not come easily to the business world, and they have to be part of your culture. In other words, when I at some point, I very rarely gave briefs to my fellow executives. I would say, hey, we're briefing on this project today, and Joe Bonatz and Susie Smuccatelli are coming in. And everybody, it was a technique that I used, and they knew, before I let those two in, we've already gone over the brief. They know their stuff. I've seen the brief. These people are good. And what I was doing was I was giving them FaceTime in front of other executives, which they really appreciated. And I was training them. Initially, they'd come in, and many of them were red-faced, sweating, like, I'm here in front of the general officers. After a while, it was like, you know, no big deal. They came in, and they were savvy. They were doing good. And that's a technique that my peers started to emulate. In fact, the bias changed from Mike being the only one that did that to executives rarely briefing what was going on in their departments when it was, if it was at all possible for one of their colonels, majors, first sergeants, gunnies to give the brief, we brought those guys in. They spoke for a half hour. Any questions? Good. And I might have had some amplifying things like, look, what Joe didn't want to tell you is we've got A, B, and C going on, and we're actually going to terminate a person on the project team next week. Right. And so my executive peers.
But you, so you would tie it together.
Yes.
Okay. Now I want to ask you this. This is kind of graduate level supervision question. supervision can be used as top cover to get in and do it. Okay. Depending on how you supervise. To me, the best people I've ever seen supervise were standing at a critical juncture or happened to walk in the room at a critical juncture, you know, drinking a cup of coffee, you know, one hand in pocket, or leaning against the post watching something at a critical point and at a critical time, and then said to the person that was actually supervising it, that they came to supervise, you know, said, hey, look, make sure it doesn't go down that trail, right? It's got to go down that road.
Yep.
And just said it to one person and kept drinking their coffee. And as soon as it sees the first vehicle pointed there, says, looks at the person supervising and said, hey, doing a great job. This is awesome. See you later. Because what's important is not perfection, the relentless pursuit of winning. Because if you strive for perfection, then you're going to crush everybody because it's you going to be doing it. And so, Mike, talk about the art of being at the right place at the critical time, doing nothing. And if it goes where it's supposed to go, you just look at him and you say, thumbs up, man. You guys are awesome. But you're there to make sure it doesn't go down that trail because you know that you can't get it back from that trail. You know what I'm saying? Yep. So can you expand on that?
Yeah, so I'll use a Marine example first. So I've been gone 22 years, Mac. You bring me to Camp Lejeune right now, and there's a battalion or a company-level exercise getting ready to happen. They're getting ready to step off. I see Marines preparing. You put me in that and just allow me to walk around. Say, hey, fellas, how you doing? Just observing. Give me 20 minutes to walk through that unit, and I can make some cogent and appropriate observations on that unit, discipline, cohesion, readiness, SOPs, and things like that. And you're thinking, you know, you're right, you can do that. It doesn't have to be your unit for you to get, because certain things, despite technology changes, Mac, certain things never change. The morale of Marines, just certain indicators, how they're wearing their gear, how they step off, their interval, you know, just certain things that you're seeing that the brand new leader's not seeing. He hasn't learned these innate things, you know, the unspoken things yet. So the same thing applies in the business world. And so I agree. If it's the relentless pursuit of knowing your people, and I'm a big fan of leadership by walking around. In my perspective, or in my experience, the best leaders in the Marine Corps were the guys that just happened to show up. You know, the colonel just got done running. He's clearly in PT gear. just walking through the area. Hey, Lieutenant, how you doing? What's going on? Well, because he's looking at them, he obviously can see that the lieutenant's got a broken arm, like what happened last weekend, you know, or you can see Marines that all have poison ivy or that, whatever. You get my point.
Yes.
You have to know your Marines. You have to lay eyes on them. In the business world, it's the same way. Executives tend to be sheltered behind the glass door, so to speak, up in the ivory tower. They often are in different floors, in different buildings or whatever. And I used to make it a practice when I was an executive, I would schedule time and I would literally walk through the whole building.
So you would do battlefield search? You would do battlefield circulation?
Yes. I would say, I have to go to the bathroom. I'm on the fourth floor and I'm going to go down to the far east bathroom on the second floor to take a pee. And I'm going to hurry up, take a pee. But on the way back, I'm just going to wander. And because I own the occupants of most of that building, I would invariably run into someone that I would talk to. Worst case, my people saw me in their spaces frequently, even if it was just a drive-by and say, hey, Dean, how are you? Love you, doing great, heard the project's going well. So it's a great technique. The best Marine leaders use it, right, and the best civilian leaders use it as well. And but yes, I can tell you that on a good number of times I pulled up short and I'd say, well, what's going on? Or I'd see a huddle. And I wouldn't say anything, and I'd go to their leader and say, hey, I see something going out on the floor. What's going on? I go, yeah, Mike, I was giving it more time to come up and talk to you, but several of our servers shit the bed, and we've got problems. They're working on it right now with Verizon tech support and all of that, but the bottom line is our phone lines and our West Coast offices are out, and I'll know in 5 minutes if it's going to be a permanent outage for several hours or if we get it up. I'm like, no problem. I got it, you know, but just walking around gave me a heads up that something was going wrong. I didn't need to get involved. I went around one time back early, just walking around, and I saw a large portion of the IT cubicles with the overhead lights turned out. And I'm like, I walked in, I'm like, fellas, you know, tough night, what's up? And they said, Mike, we have three screens in front of our eyes. Each of us have three screens. We're developers. And the screens do not respond well to the kind of light bulbs we have. And the bottom line is it fatigues our eyes. And we often have to quit after 2 or 3 hours. I'm like, wow, okay. Well, we did some research with the IT leader. And we actually got different kinds of light bulbs in the overheads for them. And we got different kinds of monitors. And for some of them that were light sensitive, we got them special kind of like gray brownish glasses to wear. And they were happy campers that someone actually thought, man, he just, you know, things happen. We complained about our eyesight in the light conditions because we're staring at screens. It's all, I don't know if you've ever seen Code Mac, but it's like the Rosetta Stone. I don't know what the hell they're looking at, you know?
Right.
But they've got to stare at that, and before you know it, it all looks the same. So I would have never spotted that and suggested that to the IT leader to look into it if I hadn't walked through on that given day and seen everything in the dark.
Well, you know, the other thing as a leader, Mike, is that you did was that you listened and you implemented their solution, which only empowers them to say the next time they hit something like, hey, go tell Etor. Wait till he takes a leak, right, and then run into him with your cup of coffee and say, hey, Chief, you know, come down and check something we're doing out. And so to me, that's all part of the empowering. And that's what I mean. What if you can create an environment where I see this like when young leaders, they write orders, right? They think it has to be perfect. I'm going through it now writing a book. And I was watching a YouTube thing, and I heard a writer say, well, the first thing I had to get over was I was trying to write a perfect book. And I went, whoa. And he said, when I got over that, then I made progress. I stopped trying to write the perfect book. I wanted to write a good book that conveyed what I wanted to convey, and I would deal with whatever fallout and its lack of perfection afterwards. But I had something to say, and this is how I wanted to communicate it. And I thought, whoa, that guy's he's reading off the server, right? And so, but again, so if you can create an environment that is relentlessly pursuing winning, and not so worried about, geez, I got to issue the 5-paragraph order. No, And by attempting to do that, you've taken away all the rehearsal time, right, all the back brief time, and all the time that they're going to use to brief their people, right? And you violated the one-third, two-thirds rule, right? And you screwed this whole thing up because you're trying to pursue perfection. That's not the way it works. Relentlessly pursue winning, relentlessly pursue victory, and create that kind of environment. And you can do a lot.
Yeah, that's a great thought. And, you know, the management technique of one-third, two-third, and reverse planning, again, for you military guys out there, I taught those to my civilian colleagues, and they loved it. And so things like that, that you're saying, Mike, come on, it can't be that lacking. They're not lacking in intellect. They're not lacking in character or desire to do well. They are lacking in some of the training and cultural things that you have been immersed in just by osmosis. And so when you catch them, come out here and say, look, I'm giving you a heads up so you can spend more time planning this. I would suggest that you do the same for your subordinate teams as well. Get out there, figure it out. But obviously, it would be good if the teams that are going to do this have 8 hours to noodle over it, then you noodling over it for 6 hours and then dumping it on the teams. Get it in the hands of the guys that are going to execute the missions. We need to hear their feedback and suggestions because they're probably going to be right. And we just need to calibrate what they're saying.
Right, right. And no, and the effect of implementing, and one of the beautiful things, Mike kind of said something a while ago that made me smile. We would go out. When I went to become a company commander, I taught all my lieutenants at IOC. I knew them. So I walk in, and they're standing there with these, like, stupid grins on their faces. And I'm like, what are you smiling for? Okay, first of all, get those stupid smiles off your face. So we would go to the field, and I would tell them, okay, look, the first 48 hours belongs to you guys, okay? So whatever you want to do, just like Mike said, we're going to be here, right? You guys divide it up. If you guys want to rotate, figure it out, and then, you know, brief the XO. When he's satisfied, come and brief me. Got it. Now, I know what training areas are available, right? I know what we have going on. So I know pretty much what they have to do. And if they're going to do that, it's pretty much got to work like this. So you, by virtue of experience, know that. But they don't. And it took them a full year to figure out, like, and say, why don't you just tell us what to do and save us, like, some time planning? I said, no. You got to go through the mental rigor. But implementing their solution, even though it's very, you know, with a couple of commas, you know, and some italics, it's pretty much going to be the same that you would be because that's what's driving you in that direction, is infinitely better than implementing your own. Because it's the whole thing about empowerment. That, guess what? He listened. We got the light bulbs changed. Like, no shit. What else was I going to do? Right?
Well, and to dovetail on that, I'll repeat again what I say repeatedly in the book, Mac. Relative to Marine leadership concepts and techniques in the business world, this stuff really works. So the things that you just said about kind of forcing your lieutenants out there and all of that, it's not an exact comparison in the business world, in my experience. In other words, I was in a position of having to teach aspects of reverse planning and planning and organizational skills and leadership to people that had been in leadership roles for 30 years, 20 years, 15 years. So these people were good people. They had every right to believe that they were good leaders. In most cases, they were, but they needed some added skill sets. In some cases, I came across people or still do that come across people that are fine individuals, but their leadership competence is nowhere near the level of their tenure.
Right.
And the art of it is getting an unskilled senior person, even if in ego and mindset only, to open up and make progress toward learning, even if it's covert. Right. In other words, I used to tell people, you know, I'm trying to show people the religion But I'm not going to beat him and make him sing the songs in front of me.
Right.
He's going to church, and I hope that he becomes a believer, you
Right.
know,
Right.
because he really does. And if you can save people's egos, in other words, I used to tell people, look, I'm not telling you know nothing. I'm also not telling you this whole organization is screwed up. We're not screwed up. We're doing well. I'm saying that if you listen to me, just listen, consider some of these things, we might be able to calibrate. We're talking about calibrating and making things incrementally better. Would you agree with that? And they're like, no, and so you save their ego, you
Well,
know?
no, and
Oh,
Mike,
come
and that's
on.
the social part. When you come across as I'm unfucking you,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, that no, you're dead. You just
I can't, in
you were
fact, I can't even do that for people that pay me to do that.
right.
In other words, there are people that say, Mike is here. We're paying him a lot of money to be here. We know we're screwed up. And Mike, what do you got? And I say, well, hang on now. You know, I've read about your company and, you know, you've done well the last 7 quarters and this and that. So maybe some things need improvement, but I've been in a lot of companies and I can tell you're not a screwed up company. Well, right away I see people like sit up, they're more receptive and all of that. Nobody, even if you're screwed up, you don't want to be labeled as being screwed up, you
Right,
know?
right.
And civilians are not as used to taking blunt commentary and criticism from the gunny as Marines are,
Right,
you
and but
know?
I'll tell you what, I don't care whether you're Marine or civilian, or when it's in the air that I'm unfucking you, good luck,
Oh, yeah.
right? Because you get everybody's, you know, you just told them and their leaders are all fucked up, and even if they are. Right? I mean, stay away from that. Now that leads me to the last question that I'm going to ask you for a comment. The last question is the four indicators of leadership, and those four are morale, esprit de corps, discipline, and proficiency. And I'll tell you what. Is this another eTorah list?
No,
Damn
that
it.
is that's a direct lift from various Marine Corps leadership pubs.
Because let me tell you, morale and esprit de corps, right? Those are kind of spiritual things, all right?
Yep.
They are grounded in, and this is why I love this list, they are grounded in proficiency and discipline, right? Discipline, the thing that you have 100% control over in your life, and you cannot be a sustained success at anything, be you an artist, an athlete, a CEO, or a sanitation worker. You cannot
Yes.
be a sustained success without discipline, and chiefly talking about self-discipline, right? And so I
Yes.
love this because it talks about the spiritual enhancement of winning, and winning is grounded in discipline and proficiency. So tell me about those four indicators now that I've just gone off on you.
Yep, it was a direct lift from the Marine Corps leadership pubs. Any Marine will notice this. It's MCIs, NCO school, I mean, everything, you know? And it applies 100% to the business world. 100%. You know how we love being Marines, Mac? You know, I mean, I've got a set of camis. I'm going to get buried in camis when I die. I love being a Marine.
You're a
I'm a
kook,
Marine.
man. Now,
And
let me tell you, General Mattis, I have a quote and that I play in Post-Traumatic Winning. And he says, the only reason I stuck around this low-paying outfit for 40 years is because of the cocky, rambunctious, and he doesn't say this, but kind of fuck you attitude of the Marine Corps that is so funny. But yet, when you go into harm's way, it's like nothing you've ever seen in your life. And we gravitated to that because it appealed to us. It spoke to us as the kind of kids we were, right? We weren't afraid to get on our bikes and go to a different neighborhood. And if we were going to get into a fight, then we'd get into a fight, right? And so this culture, you know, how we gravitated to a culture, a service that recruits with the slogan, "Maybe you could be one of us." What? I mean, immediately scares away the faint of heart, right? The rest of us is like, what do you mean, maybe? What do you mean, you think I can't? Right? And that chip on your shoulder, right? That every Marine that's under the height of, I don't know, 5'8", 5'7", has. Like, oh, you don't think I could, you know, you don't think I could do that? And so to me, it's this No, and the more I'm around it, the more I'm absolutely still in love with that whole fuck you attitude. And I will tell you, a lot of what I do today in post-traumatic winning, what I got told by the VA and the DOD was using medication and sending me to therapy, right, that they would help me endure the traumatic events of my life, to include murder, right, in multiple fashion, decapitation, one of my sisters freezing to death, and then 3 combat deployments on top of that. We'll help you endure this. So the VA and the DOD, what they told me was they were going to help me live a diminished life, but that I could endure it. I could get through that. And you know what my Marine attitude said to that? Fuck you. That's not for me. My job is to grab this shit by the throat, thrash the shit out of it, boot it in the ass, and stick it in my pocket, and then open a beer. That's what I'm supposed to do. I know that. So that's this culture that you and I like so much.
No, I agree entirely. When I got recruited in 1974, there was the Army, you know, don't join us, we'll join you. Everybody, you know, the Navy was it's not a job, it's an adventure, things like that. And the Marine Corps had a snarling drill instructor with a campaign cover pointing, and it said, U.S. Marines, apply here. And that appealed to me. Not join here, apply here. And I like that. But relative to these 4 indicators of leadership, they're out there, Mac. And what I was going to say is, you know, why, Mike? Why are you already planning on getting buried in camis? Because, because that, you know, in a corny way, for a long time in my life, I thought I was going to die wearing camis, and that didn't happen. And so when I die, hopefully as an old guy laying in bed, I'm going to be planted in camis. I love the Marine Corps. I bleed it. Now, every Marine out there says, well, no kidding, Mike, we all do. Okay, hold that thought. There are companies and institutions out in the business world that have every bit the same amount of esprit de corps and discipline, proficiency, and morale. For instance, Ritz-Carlton hotel chain,
Yeah. The
gold standard in customer service. You go into a Ritz-Carlton anywhere in the world, and as soon as you're there, the attendants are going to say certain things to you. If you ask certain things, there's going to be certain responses. They are focused on being, and they are proud to be Ritz. If you have Ritz Carlton on your resume in the hotel industry or in any industry that requires customer service skills, you're hired. It's like the gold standard, and they are proud of that. So Ritz Carlton is like the Marine Corps of the hotel industry. The hospitality industry, it's the gold standard. And I got to tell you, these people are so good, so proud that other companies actually pay to send their customer facing people through the Ritz-Carlton program. So we've got it really good at Marines. We've got, you know, just like any unit, we can be judged by looking at this: morale, esprit de corps, discipline, proficiency. These 4 things, Mac, those are the things that I'm saying that I would be intuitively checking for, even without knowing it, by observing and talking with Marines, if you let me walk among that unit for 20 minutes. Just let me walk. I don't have a checklist or a clipboard that says, okay, morale check, esprit de corps, but those are things, if you're the experienced eye, you can just tell. You can get a good reading.
Now, I'll tell you what, I've had you know, general officers on here, sergeant majors, and I've asked them, when you do battlefield circulation, right, and you go see a unit, how long does it take for you to get a sense of them? And they say 3 minutes.
Yep.
But by the way they wear their uniform, are they shaved, the way they greet you, right, the general cleanliness, you can tell morale. You can tell discipline, and that takes about 180 seconds before you have an opinion.
Yeah, Mac, to bolster that, and because I know a lot of peacetime Marines of these days, you know, they think that any kind of adherence to like appearance standards and, you know, unit discipline, it's all bullshit. We got to, right. You know, I want to go to war. You know, I want to go stack bodies and all of that. That's cool.
Right.
But I know a Marine who is a very, very highly combat experienced staff NCO, retired. I mean, highly experienced, highly decorated. So this guy's been there, done that. went to Iraq and Afghanistan, both of them, as a civilian contractor. And in both theaters was able to see, let's just say like five or six Marine battalions rotate in, both AOs. And I asked him that question, and he said, when the units were first arriving, within 10 minutes, he had an impression of them. And those that were a negative impression usually had tough deployments. They took unnecessary casualties. They didn't do well. And here's the old guy, just based off of a snapshot of seeing how to, he said, Mike, one battalion came in. They just came from the States, and every single one of their command element already had unsat haircuts. And I'm not talking high and tights. It's like, fellas, what are you doing? And he said it went downhill from there. They were late with all their paperwork. They didn't bring some of their critical gear. They were a pain in the ass for the unit that was turning over. And he said one unit was so screwed up that the unit that was supposed to get relieved, actually had to stay an extra week to cover the patrols because this unit was not ready to pick up and put their foot in the stirrup, so to speak. And it was all based upon him being able to intuitively look and assess at these four indicators of leadership. So
Interesting.
again, Marines out there are like, come on, Mike, you're stating the obvious. Yes, Marine, to you, not to the untrained leader. And remember, untrained leaders in the Marine Corps are usually lance corporals. They're officer candidates, they're lieutenants at TBS. Untrained leaders in the business world could well be Fortune 100 executives. Think about that.
Right. No,
They are
that's
Fortune
so
100
that's
executives, but they are untrained leaders.
That's a
And I'm
sobering
telling you,
that's a sobering thought.
99% of what gets a Fortune 100 executive in trouble is this section right here, the deviation from proven leadership science.
All right, let me talk about reputation, and then I saw a quote in here that I want to ask you about. So all of this culminates at the end of the chapter with a summary, and the last section before the summary is reputation. So does all this funnel to your ability to absorb all this, your ability to create an environment, your ability to apply all this ultimately translates to your reputation?
Yes. Well, what I try to tell people is, we get told early on in the Marine Corps that you really are establishing your professional reputation from the day you stepped off the bus at boot camp
Right.
or at OCS, because some people saw me do things at OCS that formed an opinion. And in other words, they know things about me that the sergeant instructor and platoon sergeant didn't know. So right from the start, you're forming people's professional opinion of you, your reputation, and all of that. And much like we were in the Marine Corps and we heard, hey, Sergeant Major Smuccatelli is joining the battalion, like, oh my God, that I've heard nothing but great things about him. His reputation precedes himself. I have to tell civilians, whether you realize it or not, that's what you're doing right now. And there are some in the business world, if you have a reputation as a leader, and I'm proud to say that I believe I developed that. I developed a reputation. I earned a reputation for being a leader in the business world that really cared about you. And if you wanted to be a leader, I would mentor you, train you, teach you, send you to school, do whatever. But you were going to be better off for having served in Mike Etor's unit. You were going to, he was going to do everything he can. If you were an open vessel, he was going to pour it all out. And so people gravitated for that because it's like everyone that works for this guy is telling me, you want to learn how to lead? Come here, because I thought I knew how to lead, but I've learned so much here. And it's all little, it's not rocket science, but we have leadership school here, And so I became known for investing in leaders. And I tell people in the business world, if you develop reputations like that, people will leave one company, move their family across America to join your department or your company because you have such a reputation as a leader. And it's a big deal. I mean, think about it. If we could pick our assignments in the Marine Corps,
Yep.
where would you go, Mac? You'd go toward the best leaders that, you know, this, it's going to be great working for this guy. I'm going to be so enriched for this guy. And in turn, I'm going to be able to make it flow downward. It's just going to be a great collegial learning laboratory. Well, in the business world, they have a vote. They can do that. And I can tell you, they hire out here, they hire senior executives, not only for their competence, but more for their ability to attract and retain talented individuals. So when my company hired me to start a leadership development program for K-Force, one of the selling points that my sponsor told them was, look, you don't know Mike. I do. If you hire Mike and put him in charge of your leadership development program and you're trying to get young Marines in here, the very fact that Mike is here is going to cause many Marines to say, if Mike's there, I'm in. They're not coming for you because they don't know you guys yet, but they know Mike. And if Mike says, listen, trust me, this is a good opportunity, come on down. And that's exactly what happened. We hired about 50 Marines right off the bat, the majority of which had gone through TBS when I was an instructor there. And so they knew a little bit about me, but I was telling them, look, we're all new here. The company's going through some rough times too, but it's a great opportunity and here's what we got. And many of them said, Mike, I trust you. I know you're only a couple laps ahead of me, but I trust you. If you say it's good, we're there. And they moved their families and did all of that. And so listen, I don't mean to pat myself on the back. That's a small example of what goes on in the business world. If you business world loan executives typically don't do well in the upper ranks, they hire you, Mac. It's kind of like your dad was a major league coach. They hire you knowing that if we hire him, he is going to attract a great staff. He's going to attract a staff that in many respects are greater than him as an individual, but wherever he goes, they're going with him. And so that's worth money, and we're going to hire Mac's dad. We're going to hire this NFL coach. We're going to hire this executive. So the lesson of it, I tell these people, is assess your professional reputation and make sure that it's stellar, both from a professional standpoint and as an attraction standpoint. Because if you have designs on being a senior leader, your ability to attract, retain, inspire, and all of that, that is equal to your competence in the subject matter.
All right. There's a picture of a sign. The sign says, let no man's ghost say my training let him down.
Yeah.
And then underneath it in parentheses, it says Sergeant Etor -USMC.
Yep.
Pretty powerful quote. Let no man's ghost say my training let him down. And yeah. So when the ghost says my, in terms of pointing the finger at you, your training let him down.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Explain that.
Well, that was, so Mac, for the listeners, Mac is talking about a page in my book where there's a picture, literally a picture, a black and white picture of a small wooden plaque, maybe 8 inches high by 18 inches wide. And it has that saying on it. And I explain in the caption that as a very young Marine in the early 70s, mid 70s, 74, 75, somewhere I saw that they were renovating a barracks that had been lived in World War II by Marines. And they were tearing sheetrock off of the barracks walls. And in doing so, they were exposing the original plaster and paint walls. And so we saw this graffiti and Marine Corps emblems. And then at one, there was literally a formal painting. You could see where somebody painted this over the threshold of a door. So it must have been a training barracks or something. And it had this saying on it, and it was ancient. You could just tell it had been there now, like, you know, 30, 40 years. And I thought that was so profound that I wrote that down. And I'd seen it in other places in the Marine Corps as well. Other people adopted it. Well, I wrote it down on that plaque. And when I was a drill instructor, I used to hang that over the duty hut because I realized, okay, I'm a very young NCO, very young drill instructor, but I mean, and I ain't been in combat yet, but these guys here, they may be in combat before me. And I'm going to hate to see them come home and read their names in the Marine Times and all of that, but I don't want to ever live with the guilt of knowing that I was too easy on them. I didn't teach them right and all of that. So that plaque was in every office I ever had as a Marine leader, and it still hangs in my my office today. And again, this is nothing exclusive to Mike Etor. We just take our role as a leader very, very seriously. You know, Mac, anyone that's ever had the experience of seeing an alive Marine turn into a dead Marine laying there or laying under a poncho and you're evacing them, that's a pretty tough experience for anyone. It's even tougher if you can't in your heart say, you know, this wasn't preventable. He just walked into a bullet. It was not negligence. We did everything we could. We trained hard. It was no error. And it just, you know, it happens. Casualties happen and all that. And I resolved after seeing a Marine like that, doubly resolved. It really steeled my resolve to do everything I could in my power to affect Marines so that if they became casualties, it wasn't because of a lapse or a gap in my training and leadership and all of that. And so sounds kind of corny.
No, it's not. It is the single, if nobody's taught you this, it is your worst nightmare. And those who have to live with this burden, it's the most cruel burden in the world because nobody can lift it from you. In the silence of your den while you're watching TV, as you spin your scotch glass and you see those faces, nobody can lift that burden from you. And that's why, and to me, I used to do this thing when I taught at IOC, but, you know, what is special trust and confidence? You know, and lieutenants who are fresh in the basic school would say, you know, well, it's, you know, with Congress. And I would say, no, fuck Congress, man. It has nothing to do with them. And then they would look at me like, I don't know what he wants me to say, right? Like, I said, so who is special trust and confidence with? And then somebody would say, with the American people. I said, boom. Let me make it more personal. The mothers, the fathers, the sisters, the wives, the children, the friends, that's who special trust and confidence is with. They send you their kid. There's only one reason that kid goes home in an aluminum can, that the enemy had a vote that day and there was nothing that you could do to prevent it, and that's your moral obligation. And I had so many of them, Mike, come up to me afterwards and say, sorry, I'd never had it explained to me that day. And I used to do this graphic. There's a mantle someplace in this country with a baby picture, right, with a Little League picture, with a prom picture, and then a picture of a Marine in dress blues. Whether there may be more pictures to the right of that may be a function of your ability to lead.
No doubt about it.
And they said, and this is like just in the last couple of years, I've never gotten that image out of my head in terms of what my moral responsibility was to lead. And that's probably my past.
What I was going to say was, I feel this way. And before you jumped in and just eloquently explained it, that's essentially what I was going to say is, I don't believe I'm anything special. I think all good Marine leaders feel that way. They feel that very deep, bone deep responsibility to the parents. And you've had an experience, Mac, that most don't. You've been in combat and you've also had sons go into Marine Corps. Right. And, you know, I have Dennis Green.
Right.
Dennis Green works at K-Force. He worked with me a long time. So Dennis was a good friend of mine from the same hometown, actually. And Dennis had a son serve in Iraq. And I told, we eat lunch almost every week. And I told Dennis while he was there, I was like, Dennis, I'll be honest with you. We did it. I did it. But the thought of my son doing it literally terrifies the shit out of me.
Right.
Because you and I both know there are Marine leaders out there that we absolutely know they are worthy of leading our son and we can sleep well at night. But we also know there is a small number out there like, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
Not my son.
Not even
anybody's son.
Yeah, not even no either, but hell no.
Yet the flaws in the system do allow some of those guys to be in roles where now their incompetence or leadership flaws are measured in blood and bodies and loss of limbs and loss of lives. So it's pretty serious stuff.
Oh, my God. So and Mike, you know what? And that's the beautiful part of your book, and in particular this chapter, is that this is the bedrock, right? Now, not all of us can be every one of those traits, right? Not every one of us can live up to all of those principles. But, you know, that's where the bar is set. And what we all have to understand is this is a heavy profession. You know, people die. And when you die, you don't get to come back for Thanksgiving and Christmas. That is forever. That is forever. And you mentioned my sons. When my sons, both of them, came to me and said, I'm thinking about joining the Marine Corps. I had the same conversation. I told them, you know, I love the Marine Corps, but do not join because of my friends that are awesome guys that are funny as hell and the stories. It has to be your passion because it's a mean place. It's a mean place. Now, I'm going to tell you what the trade is for. You're going to get a uniform that will get you laid at any wedding that you go to. And if you wear this thing to a wedding and you don't get laid, you'll be the first Marine that ever happens to. Okay? Just so you know. But the downside of that is when something goes wrong on this planet, you could be sent there and you can die in a pool of your own blood. Now, when you're dying in that pool, if you don't think this, shit, man, I've loved the Marine Corps and this is going to suck because I don't get to be a Marine anymore and I don't get to see my family. If you don't think that and you think I've hated this job for the last fucking 5 years and I can't believe I'm going to die, right? That's exactly what you can't have happen. It's got to be you. It's got to be your passion because the price is too high. And now they both joined, so I don't know if it was a very good speech to give. But I don't know if it was a very good speech to give. But I told them both, if I have to stand next to your grave, I have to know that we had this eyeball to eyeball, conversation, and that you understood what you were doing with clear eyes, and this is your decision. And they both came back to me and said it was.
Let me add this, Mac. I know we're probably running out of time here, but there is a business analogy to it, a correlation. Now, aside from industries where there's physical danger, construction and mining and things like that, where your decisions and lack of leadership absolutely can cause casualties, what I tell people is, along the lines of this, is your professional reputation is such, will people gamble with you? Will people go to your department? I tell them, because much like what we just talked about, the parents of America, everyone in your department, for the most part, is married, has a significant other, has children. And so as a business leader, if you make bad business decisions, this company could literally go out of business. And now think about the ripple effect on all those families and kids who now can't go to college and people who can, now they have to move out of their house. They can't afford their mortgage and things like that. And the ripple effect out here of bad leaders, Mac, while the Marine Corps has a ripple effect, you know, in combat, clear. In peacetime, I think it hits the reenlistment rate. Like, you know, I was exposed to 3 bad leaders in 3 years. I'm out of here. I'm not reenlisted.
Right.
In the business world, your company will bleed talent, or worse, they'll stay, and those families will just ultimately, they'll say, is my family better off from me having served in Mike Etor's unit for 5 years, or worse off? And whenever I explain that to people, they sit up, and most of the civilian business leaders had never thought about that before. I said, you know, you have the ability through your leadership to keep a company healthy, to make sure that that person and that and any of your departments never misses their kid's kindergarten Christmas recital. You know, just things like you have the ability to affect families and households if you do it right. If you do it wrong, you're definitely going to affect those households. You know, how many divorces can your leadership or lack thereof cause or prevent? Because out in the business, I always ask civilians, do you know anybody that, do you know of divorces that happened simply because of a guy working in a department that was poorly led and they were always working nights and weekends? And every single people with more than 10 years of experience, I hear Max say, oh yeah, I worked in a place like that.
That was me.
The divorce rate was through the roof. People wouldn't tolerate it, you know? So remember, folks that are listening to this, that I'm taking Marine Corps stuff writing it down, quoting it verbatim, or gathering it and saying, this is Mike Etor's basket of stuff. I say, this is what the Marine Corps says. We just don't write it down. And then I'm teaching it to untutored civilians who are interested. And they see that there's merit, that my dad was a Marine. I see Marines in my old unit that these guys, they come in, they can lead. I'd like to learn how to do that, you know?
Or I just know the legend. I've seen him. I've seen the institution. It's always been impressive to me.
Yes.
All right, Mike, where do people find your book and how can they access all this?
The book is on Amazon.com, Trust-Based Leadership. You can look that up, Trust-Based Leadership, or my name, Mike Etor. You can go to my website, fidelisleadership.com, and there's actually a book page there that you can click on the link, and that'll take you to Amazon. But if you look up Trust-Based Leadership, Mike Etor, it's on Barnes & Nobles. It's sold in Walmart and things like that. But if you look up Trust-Based Leadership, Mike Etor, you're going to find it at some point.
All right, man. First of all, as you can tell, I love doing this. And for those of you, I mean, I'm not saying this because Mike and I are friends. I'm saying this. I heard of Mike when he came to the basic school. I was on my way out when he got there. He and Dennis Green. But I heard their reputations as leaders. Mike and I crossed paths again when I got out and I started doing this. And I asked Mike to come on and talk about leadership before the book has come out. The book is an awesome book, right? The book is the best starting point I've ever seen to begin to have substantive discussions about shifting your culture, your entire leadership performance line upwards and outwards with a minimum of investment, right? A minimum investment. So, Mike, well done. Thank you very much for doing this. And look forward to episode number 3.
It's my pleasure, Mac. And remember, dry clean that tie, all right?
get the gravy off that. But hey, if you work for yourself, screw it. All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Out here.
There you have it. Mike Etor, the one and only. No, I mean, I could talk leadership. I could talk leadership all day. So one of the things that I love about this job is that I allow myself to do that. So that'll do it on a what day of the week? On a Wednesday. I keep forgetting. I'm headed to San Clemente to go have lunch with F-18 man and Napa man. So I'm fired up about that. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. You can find the first podcast, episode 1, just you spell Mike's last name Etor, Ettore. You can find him on the internet, you can find him on LinkedIn, but listen to the first one, and I'm going to tell you, you're going to have your own little leadership academy that you can give to other people as we go down this road. Anyway, on Wednesday, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Grant Newsom going to join us tomorrow. All Marine Radio, over and out.